Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by betonline.ag, talking all things college football, week 11. Time flies when you're having fun around these parts. I am your fearless leader, Todd Furman, joined as always by my esteemed colleague and co-host, Payne Insider. Payne, I know you're a college football enthusiast. Don't get all nostalgic on me with only a couple short weeks remaining in the regular season.
Week 11, baby. We're pacing along nicely. I actually don't mind college football this year. It's going better than the NFL.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's amazing what a few winners will do to try and change your outlook on one of these particular sports. It more or less consumes our lives from, we'll call it, the August 1st till they crown a Super Bowl champion early February.
I concur. I was doing a little sip of water there. Also, my head must have gotten smaller. My headset here is flying all over the place.
Well, you know, the way things have gone, I can understand why that's the case. Special guest joining us today, Barrett Salehi of CBS Sports fame, to talk all things SEC and share his outlook on the current college football landscape, as is our Wednesday and Thursday traditions here on the Bet the Board podcast. Dave Mason stops by to talk all things from the sports book perspective. To all of those folks tuning in as part of the Outkick the Coverage Network, subscribe to the podcast, SoundCloud, iTunes, follow the podcast, Bet the Board Pod. Not only do we have the college football edition, but the NFL as well. And Payne, whatever the hell week we're in, you said week 11, second unveiling of the college football playoff rankings, and we had so much fun talking about it last week. I feel it's a perfect spot to kick off the show with Georgia, Alabama, Notre Dame, and Clemson holding those top four coveted spots with yesterday's rankings.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind them. Where would you like me to go here? Oh, jeez. That game's getting buried.
I'm afraid to ask if we're talking about a pro or college variety, but I think I know as I look at the screen right now in terms of what's taking place in a little Wednesday night action.
What did you ask me here? Did I agree with them? I mean, the top four didn't really move.
No, they didn't move, and I'm asking you, like, if in your opinion from what you've seen, I mean, we know things are going to sort themselves out, and we'll obviously get Barrett's take on things. Georgia, Alabama, Notre Dame, Clemson, feel like Oklahoma, obviously one of the biggest movers, probably putting themselves in the catbird seat, knowing what they have ahead after that big win in Bedlam last weekend. TCU 6, Miami 7, Wisconsin 8, don't get me started on the Badgers, who still haven't played a team with a pulse, Washington 9, and the team at 10 that controls their own destiny and maybe the most compelling from a future standpoint, Auburn. Wasn't sure if you took umbrage with any of these teams.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have Notre Dame in there right now, but I would flip-flop them with Oklahoma. But if Notre Dame wins this weekend and Oklahoma loses, which is a real possibility, obviously, you know, I'm not going to debate that too much. Miami, a touch high. I think we have them at 11 right now, so they're scratching, clawing their way, trying to get into the top 10 in our power poll. Wisconsin's never going to see the top 10, ever. Ever. Until they win the Big Ten championship. Although, and they'll probably not show up this week, but a very good spot for Wisconsin this week. Washington, I'm just not really sure what they are.
You want to talk about a team, Payne, honestly, that hasn't beaten anybody? The Washington Huskies are the poster child for that.
They don't look great, visually speaking. I know what they did last weekend against a third-string quarterback in, like, you know, a downpour. I just don't love them. Auburn, obviously, very high on them. We have them rated significantly higher than 10. I guess the one team, first of all, Michigan State being higher than Ohio State is laughable. That's just bad. The other one is no love for UCF. Like, we have them, again, scratching towards the top 10. Scott Frost has them moving in the right direction, obviously. They didn't cover the spread last week, but, you know, maybe the market's catching up with them a little bit. I know there is some concerns there, you know, how good their defense is, but, you know, their body of work deserves them to be much, much higher than, what are they, 18th, I think, off the top of my head?
Could you see any possible scenario where UCF found its way into the top four?
I don't think so.
I mean, I'm trying to figure out, like, the ultimate doomsday scenario. Like, what would have to happen? Like, Georgia were to lose twice. Alabama were to lose twice. Notre Dame, you know, they lose this weekend in Miami. Clemson goes down to, I don't know, Florida State or South
Carolina.
Miami
loses. Yeah, it's possible. Right. I mean, I guess if they win all these games, yeah, and everyone just beats each other up, that's very possible.
Yeah, but I mean, you'd like to see the little guy get a shot. Obviously, a much different scenario than the Blake Bortles-led team that caught Baylor by surprise as 14.
What a win that was.
Winning outright. I mean, that might have been the last signature win in for Blake Bortles' football career until he's got the Jaguars heading in the right direction this season.
That was as high as 17. That game got buried. I mean, I can't even. That game was first half money line, full game money line. That thing was a whacker. Bortles has quietly been okay the last few weeks.
I mean, he's no Mackenzie Milton, but very few UCF quarterbacks can be. So
I didn't really take. Yeah, I know everyone would like me to crap on him, but I mean, it is what it is. Like, certain teams aren't winning. Auburn controls their own destiny. Huge game on deck this week. I think that'll really propel them ahead of, you know, if they win this week, regardless of what Wisconsin and Washington do, I think they probably leapfrog those two teams, right? Just by the strength of that Georgia victory.
I would agree. I think the only scenario that could be different is if, you know, say Wisconsin and Washington both go out there and let's say hypothetically they were to win by 3 touchdowns apiece, given their opponents Stanford on national TV on Friday night, and then, you know, Wisconsin drubbing an Iowa team that put a hurting on Ohio State. Maybe it changes the dynamic a little bit, but
that
I would
could
agree.
Happen too.
What's up?
That could happen, too.
Yep, and the Auburn win, I think you're talking about them having the chance to state their case for inclusion, knowing that they'll have the Iron Bowl on deck with Alabama. You mentioned the Ohio State-Michigan State game. That's one of the big 7 games that we will preview a little bit later. But we did bring in, as we said, a special guest to try and help us out with a focus on the SEC. I'd like to welcome in a man that lives and breathes college football. You can read his work at CBS Sports. You can listen to his smothered and covered college football podcast, as well as hear him on ESPNU Radio Sirius XM 84. Encourage all college football fans out there to follow him on Twitter at Barrett Salee. Barrett, did I leave off any spots where you currently produce content during the college football season?
I think you nailed all. Did you nail college football hangover with me and Adam Kramer? Because that's where we talk about college football ish stuff. Like,
I did not have that on,
college football stuff. But,
you know, Kramer's still kind of on that short shit list only because he couldn't jump on the podcast with us yet this season. So I can't really promote his stuff in good faith right now. So I'm going to have to guilt trip him and get him onto one of our bowl podcast edition to recreate at least part of our on the line podcast that we had back in the day.
Well, he's been on my list for like 5 years, and I tolerate him as best I can.
One of the good guys in college football for sure. But let's jump right into some of the hot topics, and obviously the main issue at hand. We saw the second unveiling last night of the college football playoff. Answer me this: when we're having this discussion 3 weeks from now, who are the 4 teams that we're talking about in the college football postseason?
You know, we talked about this yesterday, and, you know, it's really hard because you can sit there and say, okay, well, A, you know, these teams deserve to be ranked ahead of these teams right now, but a lot of these teams are going to knock each other off. And my answer on the hangover last night, me and Adam recorded one, this is, I think we're going to see some chaos. I think Georgia gets in. I've always said Georgia gets in. I've picked Georgia to be a national championship team, a caliber team since before the season. I think Notre Dame gets in. Because I do think they win out. I think Clemson gets in. And then after that, I'm going to go with TCU.
Wow, no Alabama, huh?
Well, here's the thing. Like, okay, so the college football playoff, we can sit here and say, and they can sit here and say, it's for the 4 best teams, it's for the 4 best teams, it's for the 4. It's not. It's just flat out not. Now, they're never going to say it, and they're never going to admit it. But in the back of everybody's mind, that votes in this process, in the end, championships matter. Maybe last year was a little bit of an exception, although Ohio State and Penn State were not equal, and that's why Ohio State got in. But it comes down to one thing, and they said this in 2012, the day the college football playoff structure was revealed, and they never said it again. They want it to be a national spectacle. There's a reason they never said it again. Because it needs to be a national spectacle. The reason it exists is not because of some altruistic plan to reward the best team. It's because ratings between Alabama and LSU after the 2011 season sucked. And so if you put teams that can regionalize the national championship or a national semifinal, you're in reality doing a disservice to the product you created.
Well, I think it makes a ton of sense when you talk about Notre Dame getting in, because you do need that Midwest representative as the Big Ten has spit up all over himself. But Payne, if you'd have told me we had Barrett coming on here and he was going to say Alabama would be the team on the outside looking in, I probably would have given you substantial odds there. You should have taken some of the value.
He would have had a plus money price in front of that for sure.
No, it's interesting to get your take there. And I do agree, Barrett. I think college football, obviously, you know, they say they want the best teams and the most deserving. They want the teams that are going to rate, and they want the teams that create the best storylines. I think it'll be fascinating to see this unfold, especially in the SEC, where you have a couple of teams that'll win their way in as they try and look for those resume defining wins. But one other thing in the SEC, for the top of the food chain, we have teams vying for playoffs. We do have a couple teams searching for a new identity. And I know you've been actively involved in trying to discuss some of the betonline.ag coaching odds for both Tennessee and Florida, creating rumors, unrest, what you do best amongst some of those passionate college football fan bases. I know you and I have traded some notes, and you had some pretty strong thoughts on the real viability of John Gruden getting that job in Knoxville.
Yeah, I don't see it happening. They're going to ask him. Like, there's no doubt about it. You know, there's obviously been talks about that behind the scenes. And I think the one thing that Tennessee fans should be happy about is that they're actually going big this time. They're acting like a big time program. They're going to throw a ton of money around. They're first going to throw it at John Gruden. I think he'll say no, because, you know, I know folks will say, well, ESPN's about to lay him off. Okay. Every other national network has a contract with the NFL, and they've all got money too. And they all can, you know, put him on a cable channel too and have him do his Gruden QB camp. And he can basically have the same job that he's had for years and years and years, even if the ESPN does lay him off or doesn't renew its Monday Night Football contract, because there still will be Monday Night Football somewhere. And he knows that. So I think when it comes to Gruden, it's a pipe dream, but Tennessee is going to go after him. Officially, they're obviously going after him. Unofficially right now, we'll see what happens down the road. But I think in the end, it's okay if he says no. You know, how do you know if the head cheerleader is not going to go to prom with you? Well, you ask her, and then she says no, and then you go with somebody else. So I don't subscribe to this notion that, you know, it's this horrible thing if you get turned down by a head coach and that you only offer the job to people who are going to accept it. That's stupid. You can offer to whoever the hell you want to. It's fine. So I think ultimately they end up with a guy like Dan Mullen. I think Dan Mullen at Tennessee would kill it. I think Dan Mullen, with his ability to not only spot talent and develop it, but then also, you know, run a scheme and win at a high level, has been proven time and time again at Mississippi State. And I was one of his biggest doubters too. I think that's who they end up with. But they are definitely shooting for the stars. And if you're a Tennessee fan, look, I know you're frustrated with how this has gone down this season, and you should be, because John Curry has basically created a scenario where prospects are going to bail. You saw a five-star kid bail just on Tuesday. That's on John Curry. This is not the way you're supposed to handle a departure, but they are going to handle the hire, I think, in a way that is pretty responsible, as long as they do not marry themselves to John Gruden and have some viable contingency plans that they can execute quickly once the regular season ends.
Well, you mentioned Dan Mullen. He actually opened up as the favorite to take over in Gainesville for the recently fired Jim McElwain, and I believe 7-2 at betonline.ag. We've seen Scott Frost get an inordinate amount of support in the betting markets, mm-hmm. moving to the favorite. Do you agree with that move and think Frost is going to, I don't want to say denounce, going back home to Lincoln to take over Nebraska, which a lot of us thought was a formality? Do we see Frost being the real front runner for that job in Gainesville?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's definitely in that mix. As far as front runner, I think it at Florida right now, with what's going on, it can change on an hourly basis, right? But I do think that Frost is in that mix. I think he's probably the front runner right now because of his ties to Florida and what he's done at Central Florida, and the fact that you look at how he's sort of evolved as a coach and the decisions that he's made. He could have left Oregon a long time before he did, but he waited for the right job. And the right job was UCF. He turned him around immediately, and now he's looking at potentially an undefeated season and potentially a New Year's Six bowl berth. So you sort of expand upon that and say, okay, is he going to take Nebraska because he's a Nebraska guy? Well, the answer is no. He may still take Nebraska, but it's not going to be because of it being his alma mater and him holding it near and dear to his heart. What he holds near and dear to his heart is a chance to be a big time head coach. And right now at Nebraska, I don't know if you can do that. Maybe he feels he can, but maybe he also feels that there's another job out there that's better, and Florida would be it because Florida is the big dog. So, yeah, I agree with Frost being the favorite right now because of all of those things. I think Dan Mullen certainly would be in that mix as well. You mentioned he was the favorite, you know, when odds came out, and his relationship with Scott Strickland. Look, I mean, they've had ups and downs. But every AD and coach has ups and downs. Scott Strickland was not involved in Dan Mullen's hiring process or hiring itself, but he was involved in the process. So they know each other very well. They work together very well. So that familiarity, I think, not only between those two, but also with Dan's experience at Florida, will certainly make him in the mix. But the guy that I think is, if you're putting money, if you're looking at best value in terms of who at Florida makes sense?
Tell me Tim Tebow. That's what we want to hear.
Oh, man. Do you know how awesome that would be for hashtag content? Like, oh, my God. that would be phenomenal. But that's not going to happen. I'd love that. Matt Campbell at Iowa State makes a ton of sense. And I know the reason he's not being talked about a lot right now is because he's viewed as an outsider. And technically, that is true. So because, you know, obviously he's sort of outside of Florida. He's never really been there. He's never really spent a ton of time there. That's true on the surface. It's not true in reality, because when he got the Iowa State job, I live in Atlanta. I go to a lot of these camps. I talk to a lot of these high school kids. A lot of these 2- and 3-star kids around Atlanta and a lot of 2- and 3-star kids in Florida had Iowa State offers. Now, most of them didn't go because why the hell would you? It's Ames, Iowa. But some did. Their starting quarterback next year is a guy named Zeb Nolan, who's from Metro Atlanta. He's pretty darn good. And Matt Campbell has been in these high schools for basically 2 years now, all around the Southeast. So that's going to help him at least be relevant in a lot of these SEC coaching circles. If it's not Florida, which I think he'd kill it at Florida, because look what he's done at Iowa State. It's amazing. If it's not Florida, I do think that he lands an SEC head coaching job, if not this year, certainly next year, because that's something that he's planned on since he got the Iowa State job.
Payne, one thing, you're a Florida State guy. We know it's well documented here on the podcast. Who's the guy that scares you the most if he gets the head coaching job in Gainesville?
Tim Tebow.
Shockingly, I like McElwain. I'm just stunned that didn't work out. He was fantastic at Colorado State. If you remember that year, we were just cashing ticket after ticket on Colorado State. I mean, he got Grayson drafted. I mean, he was that good offensively. So I was stunned to see this not pan out, but he just doesn't seem like the big guy. Obviously, Matt Campbell. Everyone knows my passion for Matt Campbell, so that would scare me for
Draw
sure.
Draw a heart around his picture.
Yeah. Scott Frost, obviously another scary name, wouldn't like to see that. And man, just the state of Florida littered with good coaches.
Wait, and here's the thing about the state of Florida. Like, think about the best coaches in the state of Florida right now. Mark Richt, Lane Kiffin, Scott Frost.
Yep.
Those are the best coaches in Florida right now. It's amazing.
Well, trust me, Barrett, Payne has made it well known in this podcast. He will not be rolling out the red carpet for Charles Kelly anytime soon, and given what that Florida State defense has done. So, yeah, we're not going to throw too much salt in the wounds, as the Seminoles have a tall task this weekend in Clemson. But one of the biggest games, obviously, right in a conference you're all too familiar with, Georgia taking on Auburn. We're looking at Georgia, a 2.5-point road favorite at betonline.ag. Total on this game, 47. We'll get Payne's thoughts on the number that's adjusted a little bit. But when we look at this game, Barrett, what should we be looking for in terms of on-field matchups and where you think this game can be won, or on the flip side, where it'll be lost?
Well, I think the biggest thing is Auburn's defensive front against Georgia's offensive line. And look, I picked Georgia to win the SEC and go to the playoff in August because I did think that their offensive line would be a lot better than people realize, and it has been. It's been a strength for that Georgia team all year long. But on the flip side, they have not faced a team like Auburn that brings pressure from all over defensively and is fundamentally sound and is deep. I mean, they have like a 12 deep along their front four. So, you know, I think that's the biggest test. If Auburn can get in the backfield and disrupt running plays, that's going to win them the football game. Because what Georgia is so good at is that a lot of times Nick Chubb and Sony Michel don't have to make decisions until 3-4 yards downfield. If they've got to make decisions 1 or 2 yards in the backfield, that changes everything. That puts a ton of pressure on Jake Fromm in obvious passing situations. And while I love Jake Fromm, he's been awesome. He makes every throw. And I do not buy into this ridiculous notion that he cannot win a football game with his arm, because he makes significantly better throws than 95% of college quarterbacks right now. And he's a true freshman. But that said, he's never been in this situation. It's the biggest game of his life. It's on the road. And he's going to be under more fire than he's ever been in his life. So that's what's going to determine the game. Can Georgia's offensive line continue to be good? And it doesn't even have to be good. It just has to be okay in this game. And I think Georgia can take it from there, because the flip side is, what does Gus Malzahn do in big games? He wets himself. He cannot coach in big games. He coaches scared. He coaches not to lose rather than coaching to win. And this is like, look where Auburn is, 10th in the playoff spot, a two-loss team that I think right now controls its own playoff destiny. If they win out, win over number one Georgia, win over probably number one Alabama, win over top five again Georgia, you're in the playoff. Gus Malzahn has consistently coached scared. Even back in 2013, when they had their magical run to the national title game, the miracle on the plains against Georgia only happened because they blew a three-score fourth-quarter lead. So it happened twice this year. It happened in the Iron Bowl in 14. It happened in the national championship game against Florida. It consistently happens. He wants to be the smartest person in the room rather than the best coach in the room. And that's been something that has just dogged him throughout his career. I think it pops up again. I think that costs Auburn a win, a national championship, an SEC West championship, all that stuff, and potentially could cost Gus Malzahn his job.
Read an interesting perspective on that, talking about there may not be a coach in the country that can see his career go one of two different trajectories. Yep. Gus wins this weekend, and as you said, Auburn probably controls their own playoff destiny. We're talking about them as a college football playoff team. He loses this game, loses the Iron Bowl. Auburn may be looking for a head coach. But Payne, this number for me is fascinating. And when we see on a look ahead number, Auburn was a 1.5-point favorite. The market obviously didn't agree with it when it opened up this week, making Georgia a short favorite. We've seen that number move to 3, and an inordinate amount of public support as well coming in on the road favorite. Do we think this is the right number for this particular matchup?
Well, after listening to Barrett, it might be. That makes me nervous, because this line should be pick 'em. There's probably going to be some value here on Auburn, and you do your reading, and they've had this game circled. You listen to Gus Malzahn, he was ticked off. They lost this game a year ago, and Georgia didn't score an offensive touchdown in that game. So the players and coaches, every single quote coming out of Auburn this week is, this is the game we have circled. It's a big game. I think both offenses are going to struggle a little bit here. That's going to be the big thing in this game. Which offense can maybe hit that explosive play? Because I don't think there's going to be methodical drives from really either team. You look at these numbers. Georgia's allowed just one offense this season to eclipse the national average of yards per play in a game. Mm-hmm. That was Dave Odom's Missouri Tigers, if you can believe that. Auburn,
hey, the resurgent Missouri Tigers that are going to be bowl eligible before
week.
The end of the year.
Big win last week. Auburn hasn't allowed a single team on their schedule to eclipse the national average of yards per play. So, you know, both of these teams in efficiency top five, neither really allows the big explosive play. Auburn's defense right now, number one in the country in points allowed and trips inside the 40. So they really hunker down if you get in the green zone on them. I don't know where the points come from in this one.
And that probably explains why we've also seen the total tick down a little bit from a peak of 51 in the market down to 47. For all those college football history buffs out there, realize that Jake Fromm trying to be only the second quarterback in college football to win a national championship as a true redshirt, as a true freshman. I have a question for you boys, not to put you on the spot. Do you know the quarterback that is the only one to have that distinct honor?
It is it slipped in my mind because we did it all December last year with Jalen Hurts. Coleman, it's driving me nuts. Sorry, well, I hadn't had my coffee.
It's all good. We'll throw you a lifeline. It's the Oklahoma product, Jamel Holloway.
Who's
had some pretty strong comments. He seems to be rooting for Jake Fromm to be able to do this. Obviously, a much different style being employed with Georgia, but should be a great game down there at Jordan-Hare that'll give us a little bit more clarity within the SEC. A game that may not have been as intriguing on the surface, which has taken on an added level of that, Alabama on the road against Mississippi State. You're looking at Alabama, a massive two-touchdown favorite at betonline.ag. Total on this game, 51. And Barrett, the first question when we talk things Alabama, since you have them on the outside looking in of the college football playoff when the dust ultimately settles, how important are some of these injuries that they're suffering on the defensive side of the ball right now?
They're very important because, you know, while Alabama is, I think we all can agree, the most talented roster in college football, and it's not even really close, you know, when you lose Sean Dion Hamilton just in general, like he is the guy who gets everybody lined up on that defense. He is one of the most important players in the SEC. And so just Sean Dion Hamilton is a massive injury. You throw in Mack Wilson, who's one of the heaviest hitters in college football. You add it on to two linebacker injuries that have, you know, cost them throughout the course of the season, Christian Miller being one of them. Then you throw in Minkah Fitzpatrick. You're running real thin. And while I love Alabama's linebackers, I love Dylan Moses, who had a 1.5 sacks against LSU last weekend. You're asking a bunch of young guys who have really not been counted on to be stars, against – look at the teams they play. Mississippi State, misdirection offense. Auburn, misdirection offense. Georgia, a not really misdirection offense. They do incorporate some of that, but a really creative offense with how they get different running backs the football. And then the college football playoff potentially. So it's a big problem for Alabama. And you compound that with what I think is an even bigger problem. And people don't talk about this because the injury sort of dominated the headlines after the LSU game. Their offensive line is just sort of average and has been just sort of average all year long. And you saw it against LSU. And now you look, they've got Jeffrey Simmons and that crew this weekend. They're pretty good. Then Auburn, and Auburn's really good up front. Then if they win that, they've got Georgia, which is really good up front, and whoever in the playoff. That is the bigger issue, is the offensive line, because it has nothing to do with injuries. It has to do with the fact that they've just been sort of okay all year.
When you look at that, the matchup for obviously Alabama's defense, does Mississippi State have enough outside of Nick Fitzgerald's legs to try and keep this game competitive, not only to cover the number, but to win this thing outright?
I don't think so, just because, I mean, they don't have much outside. Donald Gray is a good player, but he's been injured. Arius Williams is a decent running back, but is he Josh Robinson, which was Dak's running mate back in 2014? No, he's not. So they've got enough to stress Alabama, and I think that's the one thing, is that they're going to stress Alabama. But here's the flip side. When it from a betting perspective, anytime it's a big Alabama line, I typically take the underdog, because Nick Saban will typically take his foot off the gas, but they're not going to take Mississippi State lightly. They understand the issues associated with their own team and what Mississippi State can do to stress them offensively. So I think Alabama leaves its foot on the gas a lot longer, because, quite frankly, Mississippi State is more threatening than LSU was last year, based on the way both teams are heading into this game. So I think they win. I think they cover. And I think they basically use Bo Scarborough and Damian Harris and Jalen Hurts, to a lesser perspective, as the closers in the second half. And they just lean on a defense that's going to be worn out.
Interestingly enough, when you look at Mississippi State, the two best defenses they've played, they were outscored 80-13 in back-to-back losses in late September. Of course, outrushing both of those contests, lo and behold, they were the two losses. Payne, when you look at this particular matchup, what jumps off the page at you?
It's probably, you know, Barrett alluded to all these injuries for Alabama's defense. Let's see how big of a factor that is. The last two seasons, Nick Fitzgerald and this Mississippi State offense, they've yet to muster a touchdown in this matchup. 9 total points against Alabama's defense the last two meetings, a combined 82-9 score. Maybe there's a significant matchup issue here. It's nearly impossible to beat Bama if you're relying on the ground game right now. 31% of runs are grading successful against that Bama defense, despite the injuries. Fitzgerald and company, they're going to have to just make some plays outside. And as Barrett alluded to, I'm not sure they can. That's going to be the biggest one. The offensive line for Alabama is a big one as well. Can they establish a ground game? I think they'll be able to. Mississippi State has given up the explosive play on the ground. If you can hit a couple of those and then force Mississippi State to play from behind, this game looks a little differently.
All right, Mr. Bear, we got one last game for you to hit on, and we'll send you on your merry way. Notre Dame and South Florida in Payne's neck of the woods for the big game on Saturday night. You're looking at the Irish, a 3-point road favorite at betonline.ag, total 57.5. We know you're a Heisman voter. You know, Brandon Wimbush and Josh Adams, are they starting to climb your big board?
Yeah, well, Brandon Wimbush, not so much. Josh Adams, yeah. I mean, you know, you look at the Heisman right now, It's Baker Mayfield's to lose. Incidentally, I do think he's going to lose it this weekend, or at least come back to earth this weekend against a good TCU defense. And then Josh Adams is like sort of the guy that you sort of say, okay, well, he can be the next in line, because really after Baker Mayfield, there's really not anybody. Like Khalil Tate, okay, maybe Nick Chubb if he blows up down the stretch. But yeah, I mean, I think Josh Adams is certainly in this mix. I love both of these teams. I think Miami played its B-minus game against Virginia Tech and still won rather handily. And, you know, to me, this is it's going to come down to Adams. It's going to come down to Wimbush. I think I love what they do from a scheme perspective to get both of those guys involved early and get them comfortable and stress a defense early so they get worn out late. But, yeah, I mean, Josh Adams, to me, I knew he was good, right? So, like, I knew you could look at Josh Adams and say, okay, that guy's a good running back. I didn't know he had this kind of breakaway speed. I don't think anybody knew he had this kind of breakaway speed. And I did not think that they would be as explosive as they are offensively. I love Miami's front seven. I think they're really solid. They did suffer a season-ending injury to Jackson, the tackle, a couple days ago. But and I do think that'll hurt them. But I think ultimately, though, they just don't have the depth defense, because a lot of these guys are young guys, to hang with what Wimbush and Adams are going to do to stress them both north, south, and side to side.
Payne, Barrett hit on the matchup that I think everyone's going to be watching. Miami's front seven against that very talented offensive line from Notre Dame. I mean, I gave Brady Quinn a hard time for not telling us Notre Dame was going to be this good when we had him on our preseason podcast. How do you see that matchup playing out? And on the flip side, how Malik Rozier may fare against the Notre Dame defense that was gashed last weekend by Wake Forest. But I kind of throw that out, as we often do in some of those look ahead spots where we didn't expect Brian Kelly's team to be at their absolute best.
If both Wimbush and Adams are 100% healthy, they should be able to move the ball here on the ground. Notre Dame's second in rushing efficiency, you know, 49% of their runs, great successful. They can hit the explosive play on the ground as well, third in that regard. And for me, I'm not as high on that Miami defense. The front seven had so much hype coming in with Manny Diaz and his like exotic calls. Sometimes it's too much. But they've been a sieve defending the run, 82nd in rush efficiency defense, 58th in success rate defense. And that's going to have to be fixed this week. You're going to have to sell out and make Wimbush beat you with his arm. The problem is it's the Irish offensive line. They have been so imposing, right? Like Notre Dame can tell you they're going to run it. They can tell you where they're going to run it, and they're still going to be able to run it. So that's the biggest thing for me. For whatever reason, that front seven for Miami hasn't been as good as it was hyped. Rozier, there was talks last week of him missing some practices early on prior to the Virginia Tech game with the shoulder injury. I think those concerns were kind of nipped in the bud real quick when he started running it. He had 13 rush attempts, and I think that's the key, right? I don't think Miami's offensive line is good enough. I don't think Homer's good enough to consistently beat you running in like I formation. It has to be more of that zone read where you have to respect Rozier's legs, and I think that's how Miami can run it best against this Notre Dame defense. That's pretty improved under Mike Elko.
Mm-hmm. It's really good.
Yep.
Yeah. And one thing, too, when you look at Miami, despite holding Virginia Tech to 100 yards rushing last week, 102 to be exact, five straight games before that, they allowed their opponents 183 yards or more. If you're Notre Dame, you go back and look at that tape. I imagine you are licking your chops trying to figure out how you can impose your will physically under that South Florida humidity on Saturday night. We'll see if Miami can bring it for the second straight week. And the recent installment of Catholics versus Convicts, one of college football's best rivalries. Barrett, I know we didn't get to hit on all the big games this weekend. Is there any other matchup that you're extremely intrigued by, either from an X's and O's on field setup or from a wagering perspective?
Yeah, I mean, take the points in TCU against Oklahoma. Like, while I absolutely love Baker Mayfield, and like I said before, he's definitely the Heisman front runner, and it's his to lose at this point. Look at how Baker Mayfield has played really good defenses, and Ohio State does not count because we saw how bad they were last week. Baker Mayfield tries to hit seven run home runs when plays break down, and TCU makes plays break down like consistently. They are so disruptive, and so I think TCU wins that game outright. I think TCU is good enough to put a ton of pressure on Baker, and Baker consistently against defenses that bring pressure does the wrong thing and tries to, you know, make every highlight reel when the 5-yard check down is always there. That's why they lost to Iowa State earlier this year. So I think TCU wins that game. I think there's not enough love being given to that TCU defense. They are so good, and I cannot wait to watch that game because it is going to be strength on strength.
We're happy to give love to the TCU defense, but you won't find a podcast in America that trashes the TCU quarterback and Kenny Hill more than Payne and I like to do on a regular basis. You mentioned 7-run home runs. Hey, maybe you'll be able to get Baker to anchor that Braves lineup and try and put a little more offense on the field this summer at SunTrust.
Oh, see, we take it. We take anybody at this point. Like we just want to be relevant again. Like and here's the thing, not to get off on a tangent about the Braves. Like the Braves were really good in like 10, 11, 12, 13, right? And then just it's been the dismantling process has been really tough to watch. The new stadium's great. The new area entertainment area is great. The farm system is great. But some of these prospects have got to start playing, man. Like we have to get something going.
It takes a little bit of time. You can use the Astros blueprint, and maybe a couple of years from now, you guys will be celebrating a World Series title down there in the South.
Can you imagine my Periscope if that happens, by the way? Like, I'm going to need like 7 different external batteries.
I think we'll have to tune off or make sure that you get the diehard baseball fans there. You know, hopefully it doesn't coincide with major storylines during college football in October. But for all the folks that aren't already following Barrett and you claim to be a college football fan, I encourage you to do so at Barrett Salee. You can read his great content at CBS. You can listen to him just about everywhere. And while he's always a friend of the Bet the Board podcast, he hates your team just as much as Payne and I do on a week-in, week-out basis. Barrett, thank you very much for taking time out of your busy morning to join us. Love the analysis and enjoy the big games this weekend.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me.
Some pretty strong opinions, Payne, from Barrett on riding the Kenny Hill train this weekend in Norman.
It's a game we'll touch on. I would think they're probably in a good spot, the old Horned Frogs.
I mean, I feel like it's the perfect spot for us to go. We can go back and revisit some of his SEC thoughts. But TCU on the highway against those Oklahoma Sooners, fresh off of their win against Bedlam. We know Baker Mayfield now has the target on his back as the Heisman frontrunner at betonline.ag, $1.75 favorite. We're seeing the Sooners a 6.5-point chalk. Total on this lovely football game sits at 62.5. And I think when we look at it, obviously Baker will be the headliner, but the TCU defense shouldn't go underappreciated knowing they lead the country in run-stopping abilities.
The defense has been awesome. Now, it was a few weeks back somewhat middling, and they have faced, you know, the Kansases of the world in recent weeks. So there's been some improvement in that regard. But it is one of the most efficient defenses in all of college football. And they're playing in the Big 12, which is known for offense. Just 30% of plays grading successful against TCU's defense. And, you know, you got to paint that picture, right? The national average is 40%. TCU does a good job. They defend the green zone. They really hunker down when teams start to drive on them. 6th in the country in points per trip inside the 40. So you look at every aspect right now of this TCU defense. Third down defense. They're 7th in that. 10th fewest first downs allowed. 11th in sacks. I mean, you name it, the defense gets after. And one thing Barrett touched on was, you know, how you can disturb Baker Mayfield in the pocket. He'll throw you a couple balls if he's pressured. He likes to force things where they don't fit. And overall, it's a good spot, right? You know, if you start to look at the history of Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, the week after, Oklahoma's just covered 43% of their games. So that in-state rivalry, there's really a focus on it. And sometimes that strict focus on one game kind of leads you to potentially a little downfall the following week.
Yeah, we look at TCU. The big key for them will be protecting the football. Kenny Hill's failed to throw a touchdown in 3 of his last 4 games. But as we know with Gary Patterson, it's not Hill's job to win games. He just needs to be out there and not lose them. I think this will go a long way, not only determining the Heisman, but what we're looking for as far as Big 12 inclusion in the college football playoff is considered. Pac-12, a big game taking place on Friday night, actually. 10:30 Eastern kickoff out on the farm, where Washington heads up to Stanford, or down to Stanford as the case may be, as a 6-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total on this game at 50. Short weekend travel, obviously working against Washington. The Cardinals with revenge from a game they lost 44-6 last year in Seattle. Are you surprised this line has moved as quickly and as strongly as it has off the full touchdown?
I think there's a lot of people with the same thoughts that we had at the top of the show. Just how good is Washington? What do they look like on the road away from home, where they have a huge, huge road-home dichotomy? So that's the big thing here. You also mentioned the revenge angle. And if you do some reading, you know, David Shaw has blamed last week's loss on conservative play calling. But the Stanford offensive line has been called out. I know they're going to be without their left tackle. Walker Little, he's like that five-star freshman. That's absolutely awesome. You remove the explosiveness from Bryce Love, though, and this Stanford team is just a little bit different. Like, that's the one hesitation I do
have.
Can we
say bad? Different might be a nice way to say it. I'm just going to say bad.
Yeah, I mean, he had the one long run last week against Wazoo. Other than that, if he were moved, he only had about 3.5 yards per rush attempt. Stanford's offensive line allowed 11 tackles for loss in that game. Again, Shaw has called out the offensive line this week. I would expect a better version of that offensive line, but he also did say Bryce Love is still not 100%, and the short week won't help. So if he's not hitting that explosive run, it's going to make this game much, much tougher. I do prefer KJ Costello over Crist. I know the numbers didn't look great last week at Washington State's. You know, that defense, though, has given Stanford's offense some trouble the last few years. The weather, you know, so most of those Stanford numbers are going to look a little depressed, but I do think Costello is an upgrade here.
When we look at Washington, I mean, this is a team right now that, as we've seen, Chris Peterson really leaning on his ground game. They haven't thrown for more than 215 yards in quite some time. We know what they do, net yards per play. Washington stops the run. They try and establish Miles Gaskin on the ground. Do we feel comfortable that there's enough big play potential if Stanford's able to at least limit Dante Pettis in the punt return game for Washington to cover this number in a game that projects, you know, if you believe the total, somewhere in that ballpark of, you know, 28-22, 29-23 type football?
Well, I don't love Stanford's defense, and I think that's been one of the quietly underperforming units in all of college football. That's one thing that has me hesitant, because as Washington continues to get this ground game going, I'm not sure Stanford's going to be able to stop it. They've been gashed this season on the ground. That's been one of their weaknesses. And for whatever reason, that defensive line for Stanford just doesn't have the horses there. When you talk about special teams, you know, you mentioned Pettis. He's that big play returner. You obviously want to kick it away from him, but it's Stanford. That's number one in the country in special teams. Washington, outside of Pettis, isn't really a good unit on special teams. So if you can hold Pettis from returning the ball for touchdowns, I think they're going to be fine there. I also think, you know, going back to Stanford's offense, they might have some success here. That's the big question for me, is I know we love this Washington defense, and they're obviously very good. Just how good, right? Who's the offense played? You look at this, right? Rutgers, 98th in offensive efficiency. Cal, 81st. Arizona State, 87th. They face Oregon's third-string quarterback on the road. You know, Montana, that's an FCS offense. Like, I don't know how good they are. They're good, but are they elite? I'm not quite sure. We'll find out probably a little bit more on the farm this Friday night.
Yeah, one of the big tests remaining for Washington to try and strengthen their case for getting into that college football playoff. If you look at what they have left, not only Stanford on Friday, but the Apple Cup to close the regular season, and then a showdown most likely with USC, where betonline.ag makes USC a 5.5-point favorite, a game that you can actually go to the site and bet now if you feel that there's an opportunity to take advantage of line value. And it's funny that we mentioned line value, Payne, because there is one game on the board that offers an awful lot of it. I'm not sure I'm going to have the stomach to try and tangle in this particular contest, but I know a lot of folks will. Ohio State, a 14.5-point favorite at betonline.ag right now. Total on this game, 55. The reason I joke about this, look-ahead number here at Ohio State is a 21.5-point favorite. Michigan State wins outright as a 10-point underdog at home against Penn State. Ohio State goes on the road at Kinnick Stadium, a game where they were bet from 17 to minus 21 before kickoff and gets absolutely boat raced. You got faith in the Buckeyes to try and go to the well and back them this weekend in a bounce back spot?
there was
that sounded like hesitation. Tells me all there, I need to know. But continue.
There was, well, I mean, third time's a charm, right? You know,
Christ.
There's a little money already on Ohio State once a few places dipped as low as 14. Everything I am hearing is Ohio State is extremely upbeat. They've been loose during the early practices this week. Members of the Buckeye senior class have come out and said, hey, you know, our Big Ten goals, they're still achievable, and our senior class has only won one Big Ten championship, if you can believe that.
Hey, hold on. When you say loose in practice, do you mean loose with the football, or do you mean, like, loose with their attitude
yes.
out there?
Flowing okay, free. The loss
isn't... They can't protect the ball right now, so...
Right. And, you know, when you look at last week, everything that could go bad did. Everything that, you know, that team relies on... It wasn't very good, right? The defensive line, They were horrible against Iowa. They allowed like 6.7 yards per rush attempt. They couldn't get pressure on the quarterback. The linebackers, if you watch, have had issues all season in coverage for the Buckeyes. That reared its head in Kinnick Stadium. And back to JT Barrett, as you alluded to, way too many turnovers. Huge game-swinging turnovers is the problem, right? It's not like these ones where, like, JT Barrett, it's third down and it acts as a punt. It's pick sixes to start the game. It's the huge interception right before half that takes a one-score game out to two. So, you know, that's the problem. I think the other thing is, though, we need to see more J.K. Dobbins. Like, his usage is ridiculously low. I think it's 6 carries against Iowa. He averaged 8.5 yards a carry. Why isn't he getting the ball more? You know, that's probably on Kevin Wilson. He needs to be better. He needs to comprehend, I think, like, you know, six carries isn't going to have a consistent Buckeye offense. They get Paris Campbell back this week, which is their home run threat. So that should be a good get back for Ohio State. I really don't know what Michigan State is. You know,
I mean, I don't think Michigan State is very good as far as offensively. I mean, you look at what Brian Lewerke's done. 2 out of the last 3 games, he's thrown for more than 400 yards. But the Michigan State ground and pound attack has really stalled out. The one thing Sparty does do well, and I know it's not a murderer's row schedule, they've held their last 4 opponents under 100 yards rushing. And if they can do that against the Buckeyes, I don't think they're going to be able to. Don't get me wrong here. It puts a lot more pressure on JT Barrett to try and win a game with his arm. And not just win, but go out there and win convincingly knowing that they're 14.5 point chalkies.
I can't figure out why they can't run the ball, but LJ Scott, I mean, everyone was raving about him. They needed him back, and certainly he's a key cog to that offense that doesn't have a ton of weaponry. But, you know, right now Sparty's offense, just 36% of running plays grading successful. That's 116th in the country. You know, offensively 90th in efficiency, 87th in explosive plays. You know, if Ohio State gets the good JT Barrett and they get Dobbins going and Paris Campbell's in the mix this week, yeah, I just think there's going to be some love from professional bettors this week again on Ohio State.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it, and I have to imagine that books will actually be rooting for the favorite here. We'll, of course, get Dave Mason's breakdown on this game, amongst others, to try and figure out where the public is laying their cash. So much going to be made in the buildup, and it already has been, about Mark D'Antonio's record as a underdog and the way he's performed. But I'll leave you with this note on this particular game, Payne. You know, digging into some of the numbers, and you look at the scores these teams have played. 2012, Urban Meyer's team wins 17-16. 2013, Coach D'Antonio, 34-24. 2014, Urban Meyer, 49-37. 2015, D'Antonio, 17-14. Last year, in a game where Ohio State was a heavy favorite, Urban Meyer comes out on top 17-16. So no strangers to playing tight football games. It'll be interesting to see if the first time in the last 5 meetings, one of these coaches, obviously Ohio State, can win it by more than 2 touchdowns and cover that number in the process. Last game of the Big 12, kind of wanted to get your take on, is one where we'll call it an elimination game because I think that's what it is. 2 teams coming in off a loss last weekend, both in very different fashions. It's Oklahoma State, a 6.5-point road favorite in Ames, Iowa, to take on the Cyclones. Total in this game, 62 at betonline.ag. Can the Cowboys get up off the deck knowing that they let a glorious opportunity slip through their fingers? And Iowa State's credit, I mean, they spotted West Virginia a 20-0 lead, just didn't have enough offense to battle all the way back in Morgantown.
I don't know what we see here from Oklahoma State. I really don't. You know, again, you know, looked like Mason Rudolph was healthier than what he had been the previous week. See if he was a little dinged up in that game. Does Oklahoma State really have a shot? I mean, they've lost how many games, right? They lost to TCU already. They've lost to Oklahoma. So effectively, yeah, they're lost, 2 games back in the loss column.
Exactly. They got a real uphill battle, and they're going to need a little bit of help if they're going to get to the Big 12 championship.
Yeah, so, I mean, that was just deflating loss last week. Iowa State mentally, I don't know how deflated they're going to be. And as you alluded to, it was a great second half showing. They didn't quite get off the bus early on, but the last 3 quarters probably were the better team at West Virginia. Shut out the Mountaineers at home in the second half. So again, I really like Iowa State overall as a football team. I think mentally they're probably going to be a little stronger than Oklahoma State here. And then you start to just look at the matchup, right? How Iowa State's been playing defensively. It's bend but don't break, keep everything in front. And we've said that's how you beat this Cowboys offense, right? Don't give them the explosive play. Make them hand the ball off and go 4 or 5 yards and see if they make mistakes. So the matchup there, how Iowa State wants to play, is really how you should be playing Oklahoma State. So let's see if they can do that effectively. Number's a touch high, right? It's 6.5. We made it 5.5, so there's not a ton of wiggle here. Probably not a game I'm going to be on. but I like Matt Campbell better.
Yeah, I think you definitely have to give Campbell the edge at the head coaching position over Mike Gundy. Oklahoma State last weekend allowed their program worst 785 yards. Coming into that game, the previous high was back in 2007 against Texas Tech. Also keep in mind, too, and encourage folks when they're doing all their handicapping as we get later in the year, try and identify some of those senior days that are there. This is actually it for Iowa State. It'll be their last home game of the season, so I have to imagine it'll be at a somewhat electric atmosphere, knowing that the fans are going to get a bowl game to try and celebrate and a season that's gone much better than anybody could have possibly anticipated. When you looked at their win total coming in, they were 100-1 to win the conference. So I think no matter what happens in their three remaining regular season games against Kansas State, Baylor, and, of course, Oklahoma State this weekend, you have to say it's been a successful campaign for Matt Campbell in year two.
No doubt. And USA Today couldn't get a quote. I did. I was able to speak to the Taco Bell manager. Fully stocked this week, just in case.
You have to make sure you're fully prepared. One last thing on this game. Wanted to ask you, and Shee, if you had information. I know he's officially listed as questionable. James Washington for Oklahoma State, you expect him to be a go, or do you think that they may hold him
out? I'm not sure there. You would have better info in that neck of the woods than I would. But certainly
still waiting, and hopefully we'll be able to update it. But you're right. I shot a couple notes out there. Nobody seemed to know exactly what was going on. We know that it is a wealth of riches in terms of that position when you have Jalen McCleskey and Marcel Aitman. But at the same time, knowing what's at stake for Oklahoma State to kind of salvage something in this campaign, it's got to come here where we're talking about the Cowboys getting saddled with their third loss in conference play.
Feels that way every year.
Feels that way every year. I mean, we talked about it coming into the year. You looked at it on paper. I know Sports Illustrated, Oklahoma State, one of their top four teams. Their win total, 9. I think even 9.5, you could have gone over for some plus money. You tried to find losses. You didn't think there were going to be any. Would it shock you if they lose to Iowa State for loss number 3 and find a way to lose in the next couple weeks to finish the season 8-4? It wouldn't for me, what I've seen from Mike Gundy in the past. So, interesting game, but one that probably doesn't offer all that much wiggle room. When we look at the rest of the college football schedule, Payne, anything else of interest? I know we touched on the Wisconsin-Iowa game. Wisconsin, a 12-point favorite at BetOnline.ag, total 46. Clemson, Florida State. Clemson, a massive favorite against your Seminoles. Some interesting Mountain West action that'll have impact on that race for the championship in Boise State, Colorado State, and Air Force, Wyoming. Wasn't sure if there were any other nuggets or tidbits that we should drop on our listeners before we get to
the hot, steamy nuggets this way. We covered the big games. We're good to go.
That's what we do around here. Some interesting matchups to keep tabs on. But to get the book's perspective on things, we'll go to a man who knows it better than anybody else. He joins us every week here on the Bet the Board College Football Podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at Dave Mason, B-O-L. And Dave, I know a lot of our college listeners are happy that you're back from vacation after a one-week hiatus last Wednesday. Just want to know, how did the weekend go overall, since I'm sure college football went a little bit better than we get your update on the pros tomorrow?
Well, first of all, once again, it was one day I was offline. One day, about 24-hour period, not 1 week, one day. Just want to be clear there. All right.
That's a long time during football season.
I don't disagree.
That's like seven days non-football time.
I disagree. I come back from one day, and my inbox is a disaster. I don't disagree, but whatever. Let's move on. College football last weekend was great. Not great, very good. Let's still call it very good. The House, it was a good win. The House won on Michigan State was huge. LSU was big, and Wake Forest was really big. Players, Oklahoma, Michigan, TCU, those were the biggest winners for the House. But, yeah, overall the action was great. This weekend's betting card is going to be even better, I think. The action that's coming in is really big, especially on a couple of these games that are jumping off the betting board.
Well, we'll get there. We'll get there in a second. I know that's Payne's area of expertise. Wanted to ask you one quick question, though. I know that you guys, and you've been pretty, tweeting about it quite a bit in terms of the SEC coaching odds props that are out there. How bad does this scenario look for the House if John Gruden ultimately gets a job in Knoxville?
Not good. Not good at all. these kind of props are they're always a challenge to put up. When you're putting these things up, you gotta kind of realize that you might. You probably, if you break even, you're happy with these. You expect to be in the red a little bit. But with John Gruden, I mean, we're buried. He's the favorite. Some people say there's no way in hell he gets it, but the bettors think otherwise. I mean, we had 10 times the bets on him than any other coach. And he opened up at 20-1, I think. And we have him down. Let me see. What is he now? I mean, he's a plus 250 favorite now. not a lot of action coming in at plus 250, but still that red number is real big. So that's definitely going to be a sweat if he gets that job. It's like, holy cow. You know, props like that, like I said, you're happy if you break even. They get people talking. They get people betting, you know, a little extra something different that no one else has. But you don't want to lose too much. That's the case right now if John Gruden is the next Tennessee coach.
Payne, hopefully Dave can sleep a little easier knowing that Barrett Salih told us. He said he thinks John Gruden is a major, major long shot to get that gig.
Well, yeah, I agree there. Haven't they already offered him, though, right? Low key.
I don't think it's really low key. I think it's like out there that's
$10 million a year.
Yeah, if John wants it, it's his for $10 million. But you know, it's a question quality of life. And do you want $10 million to actually have to work, or do you want $5 million to do dick?
What am I missing there?
What do you mean?
What am I missing? Is this a guy that's really going to hit the road recruiting? Like, I don't get that hire. Like, go hire Dan Mullen. Go hire Matt Campbell. Go hire someone young and hungry.
Correct. I'm with you there.
Yeah, no, that's what it comes down to. This guy going to go hit the road recruiting. I mean, that's the worst part. Those college coaches don't get a break. You know, the season's over and they're out kissing the ass of some 18-year-old. You really want to do that? I'll take the five million. Thank you very much. I'll take the easy way out.
Dave, before we get to action this week, is there any glaring futures or liability action for, you know, national championship or Heisman odds?
Heisman odds. I mean, Barkley, he's down to plus 200. He's not the favorite anymore, but we're still exposed on him because he got bet pretty big ever since week one. You know, after week one, we opened him pretty high, compared to the competition, and we got hit pretty hard on that. So we're still exposed on him, but he's down to plus 200 now. Baker Mayfield's minus 175. That's kind of a break even. So this prop as of now, it's you know, a lot more action to come in. So we'll see. But
back-to-back losses certainly helped that for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
As we transition to this week, week 11 already. I can't even believe this. Huge games this week on tap.
Hey Payne, try not to have so much excitement in your voice that college football is almost over, you ass.
Any sharp or square action at this point that's overwhelming betonline.ag?
You know, that sharp, like we talked about last week, it's doesn't come in as much as it does earlier in the season as lines tighten up. You don't get hit as much early in the week. We have seen Miami, Florida +3, minus 105 or better. Washington State at +1 and pick. Michigan State +17 and +16. We've had some a lot of stuff that sharps are hitting, but, you know, we think it's the phony baloney like Louisville, Louisiana Tech, Florida Atlantic, Florida State too. But we all think that's just early in the week phony stuff. So we're not falling for it.
lay down the gauntlet. Tell some of our listeners exactly where and what they can bet. What kind of liabilities do you see? And I imagine there's some public money rolling in on a couple of these prominent matchups.
Oh, yeah. There's some big ones out there. 71% on Stanford. Shocker here. Everybody's faded in Florida. 85% on South Carolina. This one's interesting. It's kind of tells you how the bettors go from one week to the other. And Michigan State's getting 91% of the early bets over Ohio State. So, you know, everybody's pro-Michigan State now and anti-Ohio State from the results last week. Big one. Let's see, 88% on Iowa at Wisconsin.
Shocker.
Yeah, Bama 80% over Mississippi State, and the two games are getting the most action by far are of course Notre Dame at Miami and Georgia at Auburn. Notre Dame, 77% of the bets are on Notre Dame, and Georgia's going to be the biggest, and I'll probably be bigger than any NFL decision of the weekend. 85% of the bets are on Georgia, especially the early bettors. They really, you know, our odds open up earlier than anybody on Sunday afternoon for the following weekend game. And we actually all opened Georgia small dogs and we got pounded on that. But still 85%. Now they're 2.5-point favorites. 85% of the bets are still on the Bulldogs. So that's going to be a big sweat.
Little to say that come Saturday night, if all things go the way of the public, Dave, you're going to have to break out your turnover chain to don the green and orange for the Miami Hurricanes come Saturday night.
Oh yeah, I'll be clad in green and orange.
Hey, we know you guys are always generous with our listeners. Some folks that may need to reload their accounts and or maybe get started as they get closer into the holidays to try and line their pockets. With some of the other fiscal responsibilities that are coming up, what are some of the promotions that are available for Bet the Board listeners?
All right, buddy. We have the 75% welcome bonus still floating out there. If you have, do not have a betonline.ag account, get over there and sign up. Use promo code 75BTB. For a one-time 75% welcome bonus. If you already have a betonline.ag account, you have not taken advantage of the Bet the Board reload bonus yet, use promo code 50BTB for a one-time 50% reload bonus. The maximum bonus is $1,000 on each. All the terms and conditions, always read those terms and conditions, can be found at promotions.betonline.ag/bettheboard.
He's a man you can hear every Wednesday and Thursday all football season long right here on the Bet the Board podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at Dave Mason, B-O-L. Dave, always a pleasure to get your perspective, and best of luck this weekend. Go War Eagle.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend. Or no, let's talk to you tomorrow. Can't wait. Look at that.
It almost sounded authentic. I didn't want to correct him while he was going, Payne, but one thing that jumped out, I'm willing to bet Dave meant that the public was actually coming in on Washington, not Stanford. Do you think that's a safe assumption to make?
Yeah, that's what it looks like. Yeah, 75% of tickets on Washington, it appears. But it looks like they're going to get a little help from professional bettors on Stanford. So the book shouldn't be, I wouldn't think, overly lopsided.
I'm not sure we'll describe it as we talked about an electric atmosphere on the farm, but it will be an atmosphere nonetheless, and sometimes Stanford been able to lull their opponents to sleep. Anything else to surprise you from a massive sweat standpoint that Dave said that, hey, flat out Georgia-Auburn is going to be a bigger decision for the house than any NFL
That's
game on
crazy.
Sunday?
I was looking at that, like 88% of tickets on Georgia. I get it. They've been awesome. This is going to be an ultimate test, though. We'll find out how good they are. And I think they're a good football team. Don't get me wrong. Auburn's not going to run away with this one. It'll be a tight game.
I mean, I was extremely bullish, might help if I knew my stock terminology. Extremely bullish on Auburn coming in. I mean, Barrett, you know, kind of provided a wet blanket there. He dampened my enthusiasm.
Yeah, Malzahn hasn't been great. Malzahn has not been good. That is for sure.
Not since Cam Newton left the Plains down there at lovely Jordan Hare. As always, we encourage our loyal listeners to check out our Bet the Board Top 10 as part of the Outkick, the Coverage College Football content package. I know last weekend we didn't offer a pick on the podcast, but hopefully you got to the window with South Carolina plus 24.5 relatively easily against the Georgia Bulldogs. So that's our bonus selection each week. So for folks that aren't going to that website, make sure you do that to try and get the best intel that's out there. We'll be back with an NFL podcast on Thursday. But before we start to shift gears, Payne, is there anything from an investment advice standpoint that we think we could send the listeners to the window with a little bit early in the
week?
Well,
I would wait on this unless you have a three already. Let's go with Auburn. I like Auburn this week.
Okay. I have no problem with that. What do we think about the total there as well? I mean, is it the kind of situation where you almost want to say, you know what, I'm kind of inclined to maybe dab a little bit on the under? Not as the official advice, but, you know, two-star top opinion, so to speak.
Yeah, total makes some sense. going to be tough to find some scores in this game, that's for certain. It opened, what, 50.5, now down to 47. So we've seen early money that way. One thing we have seen with these totals is they tend to tick up a little bit. There's just so much public money. I don't know eventually where this is going to go. I think professionals will probably have an appetite if that first half opens up around a key number. So, you know, nothing official there on the total. I do like the side. There are some threes out there right now. Actually, there's a ton of threes. Mason said this is going to be the largest sweat of the entire week for the book. So I would envision that there's potential for this to stay three, or there's some 2.5 out there. If it ticks back up, maybe you have an opportunity with this low total that we're seeing soft three on Auburn, where you can buy that hook cheaply and get 3.5. But we do like Auburn this week. Game should be more of a pick 'em, and hopefully Malzahn doesn't soil himself.
Yeah, I think I may actually, I mean, knowing some of the access that I have to shops that cater more to a recreational customer out here in the desert, I may try and sit this out and hope that 3.5 pops naturally. Not quite sure we're going to get a Memphis-UCLA type situation, but always optimistic that something may manifest itself there. You mentioned Malzahn. Clearly, you don't love his big game performance in the past. I know Barrett alluded to it, but you'd have to hope Jarrett Stidham can hit a home run or two, maybe early, open things up. I'm really curious to see what this Georgia team will do if they end up facing a 10-point deficit at any point. I mean, we know a lot of people believe in Jake Fromm, and there's no reason not to, but he has yet to really have to lead his team from the depths of despair. We know they got the comeback at Notre Dame Stadium earlier this year, but to my memory, I don't believe Georgia has trailed by more than one score at any point in a game.
I'm not sure they're going to. This is going to be a tight game. That's why, you know, if you can get that hook, it'll be big, I think. This is going to be a tight game. I don't think Auburn runs away with it, although we would like that.
Well, running away in this game means like 17-7.
Well, that'd be big. That would be big.
So we can see what we can do there. Let's hope Daniel Carlson, I believe that's the kicker's name for Auburn, special teams working in the Tigers' favor. But, yep, we're going to try and support the books. We're going to soften some of that liability and encourage our listeners to go to the window with War Eagle in a game that hopefully catapults them into the top six in the college football playoff, maybe, you know, somewhere around that level, and make things even more interesting. Aside from that, I wasn't sure if you had any other tidbits, you know, knowledge bombs that you wanted to drop on our audience, you know, things to say, life advice. I mean, I know they hang on your every word more so than mine.
No life advice this week. Maybe tomorrow.
No life advice? I mean, I thought you're not even going to offer up the pizza advice you gave me off the air about what, you know, what you should be ordering if you're on the Domino's menu?
No. Well, I mean, I think everyone knows, right? I'm not a big Domino's guy. I'm not a fast food pizza guy. But
I don't think anybody should be a fast food pizza guy.
Quietly, their thin crust pizza over there is not too bad. And this is coming from an Italian who likes thin crust pizza.
What actually is the best spot to get pizza down there in Miami? I won't claim to know that area all that well. I mean, being in Chicago, and it's deep dish for me, and we had a couple of local joints that were top shelf. Pizza in Vegas is pure garbage.
You don't like any of that.
I mean, I'm not a huge fan. Like, Grimaldi's gets all the critical acclaim and all this, that, and the other. And I think it's good by Vegas standards, but I don't really love any of it. Maybe it's the water. I mean, that's what every pizza connoisseur says about the crust quality and some of that stuff. It's just not there for me. I'm also not Italian, though, so pizza isn't, like, in my DNA that I feel like I crave it from time to time.
Really?
Yeah, just,
what's
you know,
your
now
what's
again,
your
yeah.
thing? Well, there's a place, not to go too far, there's a place called Crust in Miami that's pretty good. But what is your go-to spot? Like, if you're having a splurge day. I mean,
you know my college football tradition. I'm not a fast food guy at all, but Saturdays during college football season, it's like the one time a year. Obviously, it recurs more than, you know, once. I've become a fast food guy, so, like, Saturdays, it usually rotates. It's the last couple weeks, given some of the success we've had in college, maybe I should adopt it in the NFL, has been Five Guys. We load that burger up to the gills, you know, cheese, bacon, you name it. You know, some fries to get you there right in the middle of the day, right about that 12:30, 1 o'clock kickoff, and it carries you through. Oftentimes, I have to fight through that nap and the doldrums that come along about 4 o'clock Pacific to get through that later set. And you know me, I'm a Popeyes guy, but I don't feel like the chicken quality has been the same. So Popeyes has kind of been relegated to the number two spot on my college football power rankings.
Really? Popeyes has declined. This is what happens when the lady in the commercial isn't making your chicken anymore and the Burger King guy is. Burger King bought out... Ooh, the king making your chicken's no good. I want that lady who's on my TV making my chicken.
It's been a bit of a game changer. May have to dabble into Wendy's. Haven't gone there yet, and I only have about 3 weeks left to go to make these key decisions. But, yeah, I mean, for someone who proclaims to eat healthy all the time, college football Saturday is kind of the splurge day with fast food. You see how many calories you can cram in your system for, like, you know, $7 to $10.
Ooh, there you go.
So sometimes you have to go outside the comfort zone. But we digress from the topic at hand. Obviously, a special thanks go out to Barrett Salee. You can follow him on Twitter and read all of his great work across the fine internet. Dave Mason, who's with us every Thursday and Friday throughout college football season. You can follow him on Twitter as well at Dave Mason, B-O-L. Payne Insider, follow him at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. Follow me there. And, of course, and most importantly, the podcast at Bet the Board Pod. Always a pleasure doing business around here, and hopefully come Saturday afternoon with an Auburn victory, we'll see you at the window.